This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is another issue of Layla Weighs In. I'm Layla Mutin. I'm an RD. I have a master's degree in nutrition as well as exercise. And here I am. This podcast is uploaded every Friday for your listening pleasure, I hope. And I'm here to present various topics. Today, I want to talk, at least give a basic overview of food allergy, food intolerance, food sensitivity. You know, often we practitioners use these terms interchangeably. Oh, you have a food allergy. Oh, you have this intolerance. You have that food sensitivity. Or maybe the patient or the client is using these terms interchangeably as well. But it's important to know the differences. So how do we determine whether the patient has a food allergy, an intolerance, or a sensitivity? Now, the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases defines an allergic reaction to food as one in which the immune system responds to a food as a threat. You know, the kid with the peanut allergy who breaks out in hives or has a rash or even anaphylaxis, or people with allergies to shellfish or tree nuts who break out the same way. This is a direct immune response. And the top most common food allergies actually account for about 90% of immediate adverse reactions in the United States. And they are eggs, fish, crustacean shellfish, milk, tree nuts, peanuts, wheat, and soy. Soybeans. It's interesting that soy wasn't really on that list as little as maybe 20 or 30 years ago. But because soy is so ubiquitous in all of our foods, processed foods, everything, that it's become a top allergen. It's interesting that so much exposure has now put that on that list. So a food allergy is a direct immune response. A food intolerance represents having symptoms caused by eating foods that are problematic, and there are many causes to these. It could be that we don't digest them correctly, that we don't have enough digestive enzymes to either correctly digest the food, or we're eating a processed food where the wonderful live enzymes have been killed or removed, and that's another reason for developing an intolerance to the food. But most often in food intolerance is a response to certain foods because you don't have what you need to digest the food. I think the perfect example of this is lactose intolerance. What lactose intolerance means is you lack the enzyme lactase, which would be present in our intestines, to break down the sugar in milk called lactose. And when we don't have enough lactase to break it down, what it does is it draws a lot of water to the small intestine and then eventually to the large intestine. And that's why you get those classic symptoms of bloating, gassiness, and then urgent diarrhea. These are classic symptoms of lactose intolerance. Now, other food intolerances can cause the same kind of reaction. And many intolerances can be chronic, meaning some of these intolerances, the symptoms may be delayed. They may not happen immediately. just as with lactose intolerance, after having a glass of milk or a dish of ice cream, where maybe an hour, 2 hours, up to 6 hours later, you start to feel that crampy, bloaty, and then diarrhea. But many of our food intolerances are more chronic, and we may not feel the effects for up to 72 hours. So it makes it actually more difficult to diagnose. And why do these food intolerances exist at all? It could be due to poor gut health. It could be due to eating that food too frequently. It could be the stress in our lives. It could be enzyme deficiencies, as I said before, or many other causes. It can also be candida overgrowth. And you've heard me talk about candida in the past. Candida overgrowth can cause these imbalances in the gut, the dysbiosis, the leaky gut, that can make us more intolerant to certain foods. So even though we may put them all into one category, you know, food allergy, sensitivity, intolerance, the bottom line of what we're getting at, and yes, it's important to distinguish what causes what, but at the end of the day, that food is problematic. It matters little to the patient or the client whether it's an allergy or intolerance or even a sensitivity. It's about being able to pinpoint what that food is and being able to remove that food. Sometimes, rather than relying on allergy tests, which many of them are good and many others not so many, sometimes the old way of diagnosing may be the most reliable way. And really the gold standard for identifying any food reaction is the elimination provocation diet. How do we do this? We eliminate the food and then we do a food provocation. Let's say you're allergic to foods A, B, C, and D, and maybe E. Let's say you're allergic to five foods. What we like to do is avoid the foods for a period of, it depends on the severity of your reaction. It could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 months. But let's start with the 2 to 4 weeks. At the end of this avoidance period, we want to reintroduce those allergenic or sensitive foods or those forbidden foods one food at a time. In other words, if you're allergic to strawberries and to wheat, you want to eliminate those foods, but when you bring them back, you don't want to bring them back together, because if you have a reaction, you're not going to know which one did it. Was it the strawberries or was it the wheat? These are great questions, right? So let's say now you're going to reintroduce wheat, for example. You would take a few ounces of that food, be it bread or pasta or anything like that, and you could eat it every day for a couple of days to see if you have a reaction. And if at the end of 2 days you're not having a reaction, you could eat it for a few more days, and I would say easily 4 to 7 days, to see if you have any kind of a reaction at all. If you're not having any more reaction to, say, wheat, then you can reintroduce it. So these are ways to do an elimination provocation challenge. You eliminate the foods that are most problematic for you, or that your hunch is most problematic for you, and then you reintroduce them one at a time. And keeping a very detailed food diary is often helpful. Let's talk a little more about food allergy. Why does it seem we have such an epidemic of food allergy? There can be many reasons. It's the failure of breastfeeding. Women are not breastfeeding as much. Certainly they're breastfeeding more now because there has been a revival in the importance of breastfeeding. There's more breastfeeding now than there was, say, when I was a baby. There's also pollution in the environment, which can make us more vulnerable to allergy. The addition of chemicals to our food, the air, the water, and the use of drugs in certain medicines and the indiscriminate use of antibiotics also set us up for some allergy. Of course, candida and leaky gut syndrome are causes of allergy. Now, the masked food allergies are quite important, because the masked food allergies are the ones that are most difficult to diagnose. as I said earlier, the kid with the peanut allergy knows he's got a peanut allergy. He breaks out in hives. He knows to avoid it. But how do we know about a masked food allergy? Often, as much as we would say, according to the research, as much as 60% of the population suffers from undetected or a masked food allergy, and people react uniquely to that particular substance or food. What is the source of these hidden food allergies or incompatibilities? It could be that we have a genetic incompatibility, you know, genes or a minor gene variants called SNPs mean that we're virtually unique in all of our responses to food. And the expression of our genes, you know, it's a switch that could be turned on or off, will be influenced by our environmental exposure to many substances. That includes what we eat. What are some of these symptoms like? It could be chronic fatigue. It could be muscle aches and pains. It could be joint aches and pains. It could be swelling of the hands and feet. It could be urinary frequency or urgency. It could be chills after eating. It could be a feeling of sleepiness after a meal, or a feeling of feeling totally drained and exhausted. Now, more of the most common food allergies, which are more immediate, could be hives or urticaria. It could be rashes. It could be dermatitis. It could be dizziness. It could be headache or migraine or anything like that. So these are all symptoms to look out for. Hidden food allergies are overlooked by a lot of practitioners because they could be very difficult to identify. And, you know, doctors are taught to look for combinations of symptoms called a syndrome or a disease, which is a fixed pattern of ailments that recurs each time. But any food can impact any part of the body or organ at any time. Now, let's talk about certain allergies and the way that they can present. Let's go back to milk. We talked about the intolerance earlier, lactose intolerance, which is different from a dairy allergy. A dairy allergy, let's say in infancy, an infant may have frequent colic or ear infection. This could be suspect of dairy allergy. That dairy allergy can present differently, however, as that infant grows. A toddler may present as having tantrums. Tantrums, besides having the terrible twos or the terrible threes, obviously, it could be a result of dairy allergy. You know, it reminds me of a time back in the days of the Phil Donahue talk show, and I remember seeing a married couple. They were the authors of a book called Milk Made My Child Turn My Child Into a Monster. How Milk Turned My Child Into a Monster. And they were talking specifically about dairy allergy. Now, the same dairy allergy that is presenting as colic or ear infection in infancy and possibly tantrums in toddlerhood, after the age of 5, can present as hyperactivity and bedwetting. And by the way, the rock star doctor who knows all about allergies, specifically pediatric allergy, is Doris Rapp. If you go to Dr. Rapp, that's drrapp.com, you're going to see all of this, what I'm talking to you about here today. This description of dairy allergy comes from Dr. Doris Rapp. Now, the same dairy allergy after age 5 can present as hyperactivity or bedwetting. In childhood, may present as asthma and rhinitis, you know, nasal allergy. And in adulthood, and how many of us are suffering with this? In adulthood, a dairy allergy may present as constipation, may present as arthritis, it can present as fatigue, headache, and other bowel complaints, such as IBS. Okay? The point is that a dairy allergy can present in different ways during different parts of the life cycle, but it can vary also amongst people. A milk allergy can cause migraines in one person, eczema in another, depression in a third, and colitis in a fourth. Some part of the body is the weakest link, and you know, that's different for everybody. And that's the target organ concept. We don't all have a weak Achilles heel. We have different Achilles heels, so to speak. And every target organ is different in each individual in terms of how it hits. How do we figure out hidden food allergy? This is actually further complicated by the allergy addiction syndrome. Because, you know, we often experience short-term relief after eating the foods, which are later demonstrated to be the cause of chronic symptoms. Let me give you an example. If you're having cereal with milk for breakfast most mornings and maybe having a sandwich at lunch, maybe pizza or pasta or some other kind of dinner that includes some kind of grain or bread or some other thing, these should be the top suspects on your list, the foods that you eat most frequently. Because it's the foods that we eat most frequently which may be most problematic. Those are the foods to eliminate first. And here's what I mean. Your five favorite or highly craved foods or beverages are the ones that are most apt to cause symptoms if you have food allergy. In many adults, it could be wheat and dairy. Those are the prime suspects. But it could also be coffee, tea, alcohol, and tobacco. And these could be the sole cause of any of our allergic reaction or chronic illness. But you may say, I eat wheat and I feel fine. It's true, you may feel fine. But you may feel less fine several hours or even several days later. And the only way to know is to do the elimination provocation challenge. So say you remove wheat from your diet, wheat or gluten. I'll give an example of a 12-year-old girl, suspected wheat allergy. She removes wheat from her diet with the help of parents and practitioners, right? And she feels well, behavior symptoms are better, she's less sleepy, she's not complaining as much of stomach aches or anything like that. And she's great. She's doing fine. It's 3 or 4 weeks later. She's absolutely fine. And then we do a provocation. We introduce some wheat. We give the 12-year-old girl a small bowl of pasta to eat at lunch or at dinner one day. Well, she has the pasta, and then she observes, or we observe, that she gets sleepy after the meal. That night, she's not sleeping very well. She's tossing and turning. And all of that. She's got some stomach ailments the next day. And the next morning, looking at her, you would think this 12-year-old was hungover. And really, it's the hangover from this delayed food sensitivity or addiction that we're talking about. So we don't really know that we're reacting to a food because we think that we would react to it immediately, and we won't. And these are the stealth food allergies. You don't know because you may not react until a day or two or even three later. And the only way to determine this is with the elimination provocation challenge. So sometimes, instead of just plain old food allergy testing for hidden food allergies, it's best to do this elimination provocation challenge. The best way to do this, and I do this here at the Hoffman Center, is you have to have a practitioner who knows exactly how to do this, because you may think avoiding wheat is as easy as eliminating the bread and the pasta from your diet, but wheat is pretty much everywhere. It's in your gravies, it's in your sauces, it's in your breadings, it's in the foods that you eat when you eat out. It's really ubiquitous. So you want the help of somebody who's going to help you do this in the right way. Now, getting back to food allergy, food intolerance, here are some questions to ask yourself. Do your symptoms come and go frequently? Are you falling asleep after eating? Is there any change in how you feel, your state of well-being? Do you go from well to unwell? And then ask yourself, are there any foods I can't or don't want to live without? Do you look forward to that bowl of pasta? Do you look forward to the morning toast or that late night bowl of cereal? You know, people are eating cereal as a dessert. That should tell you something. So, eliminating foods and using a, doing a provocation later is helpful. And if you find that the elimination of one or two suspect foods doesn't bring about a relief of your symptoms, bring about relief, remove the other suspected foods. Doris Rapp said, and I quote, if you have 10 pebbles in your shoe and you remove one, you're still going to limp. Love that. That makes total sense to me. This is Layla Mutin. Thank you for joining me in this Intelligent Medicine podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.